Hey guys, in this video we're going to be talking about man's life as the standard of moral value from chapter 7 of Objectivism, the Philosophy of Ayn Rand. Stay tuned. All right, so let's dive right in. And the basic purpose of this section is going to be to integrate what we saw in the previous section, life is the essential root with value, with man and man's nature, and in particular with the fact that man is a volitional being who survives by reason and who therefore has to make his decisions, keeping in context the full span of his life. And so that's really going to be the examination of how do we do that? What are the implications of that? And that's what Leonard's going to run through in this section. And so you can think about the essential structure of the section, the kind of summary of it is human beings are volitional, and that we have to, and that human life is long range and all encompassing. That is, we can't live moment to moment if we actually want to live. That by the very fact that we have a conceptual consciousness, a consciousness that is not limited to the immediate present or even the near present, but has the ability to look indefinitely backward and indefinitely forward, we experience and see our life as a whole, and so have to make decisions in light of that whole. And this is going to pose a real challenge, because how do you actually do that? Well, Leonard's point is that it's the very faculty that makes that necessary is the faculty that makes it possible, and that's our rational faculty. Or you can think about it, it's the fact that we're conceptual is what leads to the fact that we have to conceptualize the requirements of human survival, and the way that we do this is through principles. And we'll talk more about principles, but Leonard stresses that principles are their fundamental generalizations. They integrate lower level generalizations into the most fundamental generalizations about what's required for human survival, and then we have to think about, discover the principles of human survival, and then we have to act according to those principles. That those principles themselves, though, are not isolated, discrete insights in how to live, but they can and must be integrated into a code of values, and that this is what morality is. Morality is not just some kind of random grab bag of, hey, pursue food, pursue shelter. It's a code of values. It's an integrated set of principles, and what integrates them is a standard of value. And the standard of value we get is man's life, or man's life qua man, or man's survival qua man. And it's the idea, it's the terms, methods, conditions, and goals that are required by the survival of a rational being over the whole of his lifespan. That's something like a verbatim quote from Ayn Rand. And Leonard then ends by addressing some possible misunderstandings about this, and we'll talk about those as well. And the final perspective then, if you want to think about it, is that given that man is a living organism with choice, he doesn't know automatically how to survive. He needs principles to govern him, because he has to make his decisions in light of the fact that he lives long range. The science that's going to give those principles and give an integrated set of principles governing how to do that is morality. Morality is going to, the moral standard that's going to govern us is man's life. Now, I want to delve a little bit into the issue of why act on principle, because this really plays a central role here. And the first thing to note about it is that usually when people raise questions about why act on principle, it usually comes up in regard to specific principles. And so people often, you know, have questions like, well, why shouldn't I tell this one lie or engage in this one con job if I can get away with it? And we'll talk about that kind of issue more when we get to honesty. But from objectivism's perspective, that blends two different questions. And often those two get conflated. So on the one hand, it could be asking, Why is honesty a virtue? Why is honesty a principle that's in our self-interest? I think more often what's really going on is saying, well, why do we need to act on principles at all? So it's not about the content of the principle, it's about why principles at all. And that comes up all the way back here in discussing man's life as the standard. It's that for morality to even get off the ground, for us to even start talking about it, first we need to know we need morality. And knowing that you need morality is to say you need principles. If all you needed was kind of discrete seat of your pants guidance, you wouldn't need a code of ethics. We would be in the position of what the pragmatists recommend, is if you remember what Leonard says, that we can make, in effect, just experimental, range of the moment decisions, perceptual, emotional based. And it's precisely because we can't do that and succeed that objectivism thinks, no, we need principles. And the argument for principles, one way to think about it in a more informal way, is that it's basically saying, do you really think you can survive by the seat of your pants? Do you really think you can achieve the values that are going to sustain us by the seat of your pants, by going by emotion? And if you've gotten this far in the book, then the view should be, well, no, our means of survival is reason. Emotion without a check by reason, without emotions as a guide to reality, well, that's like acting blindly, because we don't know the relationship between our emotions and reality. We can't go by percepts. Percepts give us access essentially to the range of the moment, to what's right in front of our face. So if you can't act blindly, if you can't go by the seat of your pants, the only alternative is principle. So that's kind of a negative way to look at it, but in a certain way, we're so suspicious of principles today, but really it's quite the opposite. Like, who could think that anything else but a principle could allow you to make good decisions, decisions that integrate the short range and the long range, that integrate all the various components of a human life? And one thing that we'll cover more later when we turn to happiness, but I think is worth noting, principles aren't guarantees. They don't guarantee success, but neither is the right way to think about them, as in effect, like they increase your statistical odds of success. And then if you violate principles, well, you've just decreased your statistical odds of success of life. The right way to think about this is that what they are necessary conditions of success, or you could think of that even more, necessary conditions of long-term success. And to say that they're necessary conditions leaves open, well, are they sufficient? And they're not sufficient in this sense, which is accidents are possible. So one of the things we're going to talk about when we talk about the other virtues like honesty is the way in which, if a person's like engaging in dishonesty, if they get away with it, it's by accident. And what we want is rather the reverse, that our success is the to be expected and that failure is accidental. And so, I mean, you know, one way to think about it is I'm thinking of different kinds of analogies. But if you think about like driving, right? I mean, if you drive and you're careful and you follow the principles of good driving, then you could still get in an accident. Unforeseen things can happen. You could something could like fall out of a truck in front of you, or you get blindsided by a different driver. But the to be expected is that you safely arrive at your destination. Whereas if you get behind the wheel and you're completely drunk, you're blindfolded, you're ignoring the principles of proper driving, then in effect, it's an accident if you don't get in an accident. And that if you stretched out those policies of driving over time, then you're basically, what you're guaranteeing is that a person following the latter policy is going to get an accident. It's not a perfect analogy, because with principles, it's much more if you extend them over time. That's where the success comes. So if you think about the fountainhead, Rourke spends many years, I mean, close to two decades, that in order to achieve success by acting on principle. And so it's, and in the meantime, all sorts of accidental factors are slowing him up. But the what principles are doing is they're giving you the conditions, the necessary conditions of success, and barring accidents, the success is to be expected acting by principle. So the next point I want to go to is this idea that, all right, it's not just that we need discrete principles, it's that we need a code of ethics. And so it's important to get that in the last section, we were establishing that values have to be based on life, but that does not yet establish that human beings need a code of values. That is a perspective that comes from getting that, well, we need principles. And then it's, we need those principles to be integrated. And well, why is it that you need them to be integrated? Because life is an integration. If we think about our discussion of lower level animals and what it means to be a living being as self-generated and self-directed action, the idea was everything in a living organism is structured such that it is aiming at survival, the self-preservation of that organism. Or as we talked about different kind of examples and aspects of that, and even something like reproduction, how it fits into that. The way that Leonard puts it is, or that Ayn Rand puts it, is that, you know, life requires I'm blanking out on exactly how she puts it, but it's like a single course of action. And what we're recognizing when we say we need a code of values is that you need principles that are integrated in order to actually achieve life. That another way to think about it is that nothing is agnostic or fails to impact life. Any choice and anything that happens to a living organism is either for the better or for the worse. And so if you're going to have a code that's going to direct you towards life, everything has to be in harmony and pushing you in that direction. And I'm just consulting my notes because I'm in a rush tonight and cannot afford to do a lot of editing. Oh, we can put this in the context of what we were talking about when we were talking about the subject of morality. If you remember, Ayn Rand in those notes talked about, like, most people, non-heroic people, the masses, if you will, the masses can't devote themselves, give themselves fully to anything. And yet this is kind of the part of the essence of a hero, of a moral hero, is that they're all in on a central idea, central ideal and value in their life. And if you think about, like, why would that be? Well, it's precisely that if you don't integrate everything around a single idea, you're pulled in different directions. And that's precisely what it means, is you can't give yourself fully to anything. It's, well, I have this tugging me over here and this over there, and I'm just torn apart by all these conflicts. And for an Ayn Rand hero, for somebody who's going to be living rather than existing at that point, they need to be all in on their mission, you might put it. And so that's the perspective that we get in Little Street, the notes for Little Street. We get that fleshed out a lot more in The Fountainhead. And if you think about Rourke's building philosophy, it's that a building has integrity just like a man. It's a single idea that serves as a standard of selection that everything is integrated around. And then we talked about in what way that was a perspective on human valuing as such, is that you need an integrating idea, standard of selection, and then everything is determined by reference to that. Everything is connected to that. And so what we're getting here in this section in OPAR is the kind of final perspective on that, which is tying our need to integrate everything around a central idea to, this is what's required to survive. Because if we don't integrate everything around this idea of doing what's required for the organism's life, for man's life, we push ourselves in the direction of death. We inflict damage on ourselves, and damage is moving us away from life and towards death. And there's no in between. There's nothing that is going to just be neutral in the case of life. So we'll talk about this more in various places as well. And I think a little bit even more in this video. But part of what we'll see, and Greg Salmieri in many places stresses this kind of perspective on what it means to be a valuer, is that you're going to formulate a life for yourself, a constellation of values that fit together. And the fitting together is part of it, is not part of what allows you to figure out how to fit them together is a code of ethics. One way to think about it is that, I mean, imagine, and this is a stupid analogy possibly, but I'm thinking of it in the moment. But if you've ever got those kind of like paint by numbers things, well, it tells you, okay, like here's where, you know, you put the colors, but you get to pick the colors. So it's what philosophies give you, what morality gives you, is like, this is a design that's a workable design, but you get to pick the specific values that fill it, the specific career, the specific romantic interest, the specific hobbies, whether or not you want to have children, all kinds of particular values that you're going to pursue and that are going to constitute your life are your choice. But what morality is going to tell you is, hey, put them inside these lines, in effect, because then you'll be able to make a painting that works rather than just start splashing paint at random. I can see many problems with the analogy, but I think it captures something useful about this issue. Now, what is the standard of selection? And that is, we get man's life qua man, that at the level of thinking about morality, the standard of what is going to unify all of the various virtues and values that morality is going to formulate is one single goal. And if you think that, take the analogy back to Rourke's buildings, it's that you'd have a single goal, let's say, with Cortland. It's, you know, low-income housing, basically. And that's the standard of selection that everything is going to be determined by. It's low-income housing at this location, and given the materials available at that time time and place in history. That's kind of the metaphysical basis, and then the purpose that are going to shape all the other choices that go into the value. And so that's in effect what man's life is doing. It's saying, given what man is and given the nature of the universe, the single goal that's going to determine all of the things we should go after and the methods by which we should go after them is man's life, or man's life qua man. And that the idea of man's life qua man, as Leonard indicates, it is often misunderstood, or people struggle to get. In what way it is, Ayn Rand is not adding something to survival. So if we said that, you know, the standard of life for, or the standard of value for a living organism is its life, when she says man's life qua man, that which is required for the survival of a rational being over the course of his lifespan, people have said, well, no, you're kind of adding a bunch of stuff so that you can fit in values more than just the kind of basic food, clothing, shelter. All of these more spiritual values, the kinds of things that will often be put under the rubric of flourishing, that you're just kind of adding on. But that's definitely not at all her perspective, and it's certainly not happening because of she's adding some other feature to the standard of value in man's life. The way to think about it is this. Imagine that there's somebody at a polling station when you're voting, which many of us just did in a presidential election, and they said, all right, go in there and cast your vote. Okay, that's an instruction. What if they said, cast your vote by checking the box of your preferred candidate. Well, they haven't added any new information. Checking the box your preferred candidate, assuming that's the actual way that you do it, they're just specifying what is implicit in go in there and vote for your candidate. This is how you do it. You put the check marks in front of the candidate you want. Now contrast that if somebody is, if you're at a polling place and they said, all right, go into the voting box and put a check mark next to Trump. Well, now you're adding something, right? You're putting something that's not contained in the basic idea of go in there and cast your ballot. You're adding content to it rather than specifying for more clarity what's implicit in the idea of casting your ballot. Well, man's life qua man, or man's survival, or man's life is, it's like saying check the box. It's not saying like check the box for Trump. In grasping that we're talking about the survival of man, that that's the goal. Well, we already have that his basic means of survival is reason. And so what we're doing is just bringing that out, raising that to the forefront of our thinking in formulating the standard of value. So you could just say it's this, the standard of value is man's life. And that's fine. That's perfectly clear. But then you'd have to think, all right, well, what does that actually consist of? And so in order to get an answer to that question, you would want to know what's his basic means of survival. And so all Rand is doing is bringing to the surface, making fully explicit that in order to determine the values and virtues that are going to add up to human survival, we have to focus on that the essence of what man is a rational being, a being who survives by reason. And this is a similar reason to why, from the objectivist perspective, survive and flourish is often viewed as a dichotomy, but from objectivism's perspective, that it makes zero sense. That if the goal is survival, then the implication is everything that pushes you in the direction of survival is good, and everything that pushes you away is bad. And so, I mean, you could think of different analogies for this. Like, so if I said, my goal is to play at Major League Baseball. Well, if that's my goal is to play in the major leagues, then it's not like I want to eke past and be the last player that they allow through. No, I want to do everything possible to make my position more and more secure by being better and better at playing baseball. Or if you think that I want to save my marriage, it's not that you think I want to do the minimum possible so that my wife or husband doesn't leave me. It's that if that's your standard of selection, then anytime there's a choice relevant to your marriage, I'm going to do the thing that makes it better, that makes it stronger, that makes it more solid and enjoyable, and pushes me further and further in the direction of a good marriage and further and further in the way from a train wreck of a marriage. And the wider point here is that in that any standard of value in any given domain, it demands maximizing, it demands optimizing for that standard, absent competing, how would you put it, priorities. So if you have competing priorities, then yeah, maybe you don't maximize. But that's precisely the point that objectivism is making about life as the standard of value, is it's not competing with anything. There is no competition for an ultimate value for the reasons we talked about last time. This is an all-encompassing, full-time, supreme goal that nothing higher or outside of life can have a claim on us and our time. And so it should be seen then, if survival is your goal, it means everything that pushes you in a stronger and stronger position to cope with the challenges of life. And so it's not wrong to talk about flourishing, and there's something that brings to the fore that's right. But it's right to talk about survival. And part of what using a word like survival highlights, and I think the reason, if you look at how Leonard formulates all of the ethics, it is very much stressing the issue of survival and the issue of literal life and death. And I think that's precisely to ground the objectivity of values. It's to get that we have a clear objective standard that we can assess. Yes, this course of action literally leads on a course that ultimately climaxes in death. And so that's, we don't want to do that. But it's the same issue, just viewed from two different perspectives. It's survival is stressing the, if you don't do these things, you will die. Flourishing stresses, these are the things that lead you to the greatest possible state of living. And if you look at what Ayn Rand uses more than anything else, the language she uses is living. And I think living is a really good concept because it, in many contexts, carries with it the connotation of both that it's living versus dying, and that it's living in a healthy state. It's living in a good state. Like, man, that guy is really alive, or I feel alive right now. When somebody says, I feel alive right now, it's not when they're hooked up to a hospital bed and they're just noticing that they haven't completely passed out, you know, and stop breathing. It's, they say that in cases where it's kind of peak states of life. And so from objectivism's perspective, all three of those concepts are legitimate, and all three of them mean the same thing. They have the same referent, the life of a Galt, the life of a Dagny, the life of a Kira, and that the only difference between the concepts, if you're using them properly, is what they're stressing about. That is it stressing, you know, that you can stress the kind of richness and happiness and completeness of that state of being alive. You can stress the issue that the alternative direction really pushes you towards literal actual death, or living, which I think is the really the unity of perspectives. And I think that's the reason that Ayn Rand uses it. One last thing I wanted to go into, which is similar to what we've been discussing, that objectivism rejects this idea that man's life means quantitatively getting the most time above ground, like not dying for the longest. And in fact, it rejects the whole quantity-quality distinction. And the way to think about it is our goal is to identify a way of life that is coheres into a self-sustaining whole, that doesn't make our continued existence accidental. And it's from that perspective then that we're going to select, as we go through our lives, the particular concrete values that are going to cohere into a self-sustaining whole. So it'll be things, as we'll see, like a career that fills us with meaning, and a lover who embodies our values. And it can include things like children, and hobbies and art, all of the things that keep us alive, sustain us, sustain our mind, our motivation, fill us with joy. And so it's these particular values that then constitute our life, that constitute its meaning, that constitute what we're going for. And my aim then in life, or the way that I experience pursuing my life, is not as some abstraction. And it's certainly not as, hey, each day that goes by, that's a victory no matter what. Rather, it's that I experience my life as made up of these values that I'm all in on. And in that kind of context, assuming that you've picked values that are not clashing, values that are not pushing against your other values and your life overall, assuming that you've rationally chosen a coherent set of pro-life values, that you would not sacrifice those in order to eke out more time or lower risk. So it's, you choose the values that are going to constitute your life, that are going to make up and define your happiness. And then it's within there that then time is a value. But it would not, but you couldn't say, well, I really love being a pilot. It's a productive career. It fills me with pleasure, but I shouldn't do it because I could probably statistically have greater odds of having a few great years if I settled for being a mailman, right? No, it's that you pick a legitimate value. Everything has a risk. You pick a legitimate value that gives meaning to your life. And it's, I want the life of a pilot. And if there's slightly more risk, or if it means that, you know, I'm not going to become a billionaire, and maybe that will mean I can't get as good of health care. And so I, you know, I'm going to live a couple years less than I would if I tried to be an entrepreneur or something. All of that is irrelevant. It's that you're picking legitimate values that cohere into fitting together to sustain you over a lifespan, and then you would not sacrifice them for more time at the cost of your values, at the cost of that which constitutes your life. And so there's the, what would you put it? I mean, there's a famous saying that, you know, I'd rather die than live as a slave. And that's exactly right. It's that life is a value, but it's your conception of your life, which means the particular values that are going to constitute your life, that are going to keep you alive, and that are that which give life meaning. And in that kind of context, then it's not anti the objectivist ethics. It's not anti man's life to say something like, I'd rather die than live as a slave. On the contrary, it's as a slave that you can't live. You can't pursue your values. Yeah, you can get some food inside your mouth and still be able to kind of perceive the world and perceive your enslavement and put food in the mouth of your master, but you can't live. You can't define values that cohere into a self-sustaining whole. And it's precisely, that is precisely what it means, as we'll see, to choose to live. And in the sense that there is a reason to choose to live, which is something we'll talk about, it's precisely that. It's that you can get values that fill your life with joy, pleasure, and meaning. And so if we want to summarize this point, you know, just to make sure it's totally clear, to do something irrational and anti-life is to do something that makes a successful life an accident. But that is very different to say that I've chosen values that make success and happiness the to be expected, but if ever faced with a choice that, oh, I could surrender those and eke out some time on earth, yet my values are gone and obliterated, from objectivism's perspective, no, what it means to hold man's life as standard is not time as an end in itself, but it's your commitment to self-sustaining values, and that's the kind of perspective to take on it. All right, so usually with these, I do a few takes to kind of give you the best stuff, but we are in a really weird situation right now. I don't want to date this podcast too much, but just so everybody knows, this is the midst of the second wave of COVID-19, and my kids were suddenly kicked out of school and sent home for full-time online schooling, and that means full-time daddy and or mommy overseeing the schooling. So I'm trying to get as much done as I can in as little time as possible. So hopefully it was not too meandering and there is a lot of value there. If you think that it was very bad, let me know and I'll re-record it at some point. But I want to keep moving through this book because I think we're getting into some of the most interesting topics, and certainly topics I have a lot to say about. And in fact, we'll see. I'm debating whether to break up the next section into two, but we'll get to that at some point. So with that, be sure to like the YouTube channel or like the video, subscribe to the YouTube channel, and sign up for the newsletter at donwalkins.com so that you can keep up with writing that I don't share anywhere else and everything else that I'm creating. Talk next time.